All right, let's get into our series. Last week we started a series, a four-part series on stewardship. We're going to continue that this week, looking at Luke chapter 12. This Sunday we'll be beginning with verse 13 and going through verse 21. Please read with me. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who made me a judge or arbiter over you?" He said to them, "Take care. Be on your guard against all covetousness. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." And he told them a parable, saying, "The land of a rich man produced plentifully. And he thought to himself, 'What shall I do? For I have nowhere to store all my crops.' And he said, 'I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to myself, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this night your soul is required of you. And the things that you have prepared, whose will they be?' So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." This ends the reading of God's word. All men are like grass, and all of our glory is like the flowers of the field. The grass withers and the flowers fade, but the word of God stands forever. So let's give our attention to it. The once popular author and radio personality, I guess he still is popular in some circles. I don't hear as much about him anymore. Steve Brown, he tells a story of asking his mom, "Mom, when were you converted?" And his mom responded, "I was converted the same month I started tithing to the church." And he laughed, and she didn't. And he said, "Well, which came first, Mom?" And she said, "I may never know." That's an interesting answer in my book, but I think she was on to something that most of us hesitate to acknowledge, and that's this. She had gone to church her whole life. She knew the Bible stories. She knew the theological answers. She knew she was saved by grace through faith. She knew the stuff. She went to all the potluck dinners. She made the chicken spaghetti. She was on the committee. She was the chairman of the women in the church. But until she started making concrete contributions from her life, until the gospel affected her purse, it wasn't real. It wasn't real. Every now and then I'll get, I don't know if y'all ever see any cynical people out there. There are a few. And somebody will kind of cynically say, "Well, I just don't think God is short of cash." And I'll respond, "Well, that's convenient for you, isn't it? I don't think God's short of cash either, but he still asks us to give." And we're going to talk about money for the next 3 weeks. And I'm going to be really nervous and make a lot of jokes because that's what I do when I talk about money. And y'all are going to laugh appropriately to affirm that you're still listening. But I do think this is an important topic. It's an important topic. Jesus begins Luke chapter 12 by talking about hypocrisy. Do not be like the Pharisees. Do not be one thing in public and something completely different in private. And under this rubric of talking about hypocrisy, fake Christians, under that heading, he talks about money, three parables about money. Isn't that interesting? What does money have to do with hypocrisy? Well, it's a little bit obvious, isn't it? It's easy to say you're something. It's easy to pretend you're something. But does your faith actually make a requirement on you? Is it actually practically affecting your life? Jesus is telling us one sure and easy way to examine the reality of your faith is by looking at your giving. And even deeper than that, I think Jesus is showing us that our attitude about money reveals the identity of our God. Our attitude about money shows us the identity of our God. What we worship, what we truly worship, what we look to for joy, what we look to for comfort, what we look to for security can be more easily identified by looking at our money than by anything else. The first thing I want you to see in this text is that money matters. That money is a big deal. It's a big deal to God. He actually cares about it. Jesus and the Bible take money very seriously. He kind of ignores all the taboos, and he dives right in. There's a funny example. In the beginning of Luke, John the Baptist is out baptizing people, preparing the way of the Lord, and people start coming to him, asking him questions. And they all ask the same question, what shall we do? And I want you to hear his answers. He says, he answered them, whoever has two tunics is to share with him who has none. Whoever has food is to do likewise. Tax collectors also came to be baptized and said to him, teacher, what shall we do? And he said to them, collect no more than you're authorized to do. Soldiers also asked him, and we, what shall we do? And he said to them, do not extort money from anyone by threats or by false accusations, and be content with your wages. And what's ironic about that text? Did anybody ask him about money? No, they just simply said, what should we do? You know, and we're all evangelicals, and our answer is, repent and be baptized and believe. John the Baptist didn't have that good of theology, so he said, go be content with your money. Stop stealing. Be generous. Isn't that interesting? According to some, the book of Luke, 28% of the book of Luke is dedicated to money. I just find that to be an enormous amount. Why does God take money so seriously? Well, first of all, God takes money seriously because money reveals your heart. Luke 12:34 says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Your heart goes after your money. You know that if you've ever spent a lot on anything. If you spend a lot of money, if you saved up like I did for your first car, then you care about that car. You're watching it, right? The first scratch you get on it, the first bird who messes on it, it just changes your life. If you make the huge mistake, if you have a lot of children in your house, and you make the huge mistake that I made of getting a large screen television, it changes the entire scope of the room, right? It's no longer a fun room. There is no wrestling in this room ever again. Your heart goes after your money. The things you spend a lot of money on are the things you care about. Your attitude about your money reveals your heart. If you spend a lot of money on beauty supplies and cosmetic surgery and you show the world that you're concerned with your appearance, that's your slavery. If you spend your money on liquor and restaurants, then you're showing the world that you believe you want to have a good time. And what you live for is enjoyment and pleasure. If you put all your money into savings, then you're revealing that what you care about is security and power. Where the feeling of having money drives you. Where your treasure is, that's where your heart is also. That's the first reason God's interested in money. The second reason is money reveals your maturity. A child simply cannot take care of money. He just can't. And we all know that. That's why we give them none. But the same is also true for a lot of 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds. If you're... The way you take care of money just defines whether or not you're a grown-up. In the Old Testament, people didn't have cash. They had land. That was their capital. And Proverbs 24 says, I passed by the field of a sluggard, by the vineyard of a man lacking sense. And behold, it was all overgrown with thorns, and the ground was covered with nettles, and its stone wall was broken down, and I saw and considered it. I looked and received instruction. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. And poverty will come upon you like a robber and want like an armed man. Now, most of us don't have fields. But almost all of us have checking accounts. And you really can look at somebody's financial life and see whether or not they're responsible. Look at what they're spending on. I have a good friend who was meeting somebody to play golf, and he walked to the golf shop, and he saw this Jack Nicklaus polo shirt, and it was a $67 shirt, which is fine because he had $78 in his checking account. And so he's planning on buying it. before he had a chance to buy it, his friend came. They're playing golf. He tells his friend, oh, by the way, you know, we're expecting a baby. You know, real excitement. Congratulations. Pats on the back. About nine holes later, his friend looks at him and goes, so how much, you know, you got your money saved up. You know how much this is going to cost? And my buddy looked at him and goes, well, I got insurance. He said, well, you know, I know you have insurance, but you know you have, you know, your wife has a $2,000 deductible. Your baby's going to have a $2,000 deductible. And then after that, there's really, you know, the insurance only pays 80%. So it's going to end up costing you about $4,000 to $5,000. You know, are you ready for that? Kevin looked at him and goes, I have $78. You know, and my friend looks back and goes, I know you don't have money in your checking account. Nobody, you know, keeps money in their checking account. How much money do you have? I don't think you're listening. I have $78. What was he saying? He's saying, I'm a child about to step into manhood. And I'm not ready. And you need to understand that. You can kind of dress it up and say, well, I trust the Lord or whatever. But you don't. God takes money seriously. So seriously that he says if anyone fails to take care of the members of his own household, anyone who does not provide for the members of his own household has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Single guys, I'm looking over here, this is where you sit. Single guys, see, there's nobody there. Single guys, sometimes I get asked, what do I need to do to be getting ready to, you know, to be a husband and to be a father? What do I need to do? I'll tell you what you need to do. Get a job and save money. That seem boring? Well, go do it. Be financially mature and you'll be a mature person. Money reveals our heart. Money reveals our maturity. And thirdly, money is not simplistic. And what do I mean by that is this. A lot of people, when you're a teacher like I am, the temptation is to just boil things down and make it all either real black or white. And so we have a lot of that going on. We have some people saying, so having money is just bad. And if you have money, you need to give it all away and go live with the poor. And that's where real spirituality and the real revolution of Christ is to be found. And on the other hand, you have people, a few in Tulsa, who would say, having money is a blessing of the Lord. So you should live like you have money, whether you do or not. And you should, you know, be extravagant with how you spend it and show it, to show your faith. And if you don't have money, you're a bad person. Gee, guess what? Both are wrong. And it really is important that you understand, both are wrong. The Bible does not divide people into, you know, good and bad. Actually, it does not divide. The line of good and bad does not go down between rich and poor. The line of good and bad goes down every one of our hearts. And the issue in the Bible is not whether or not you're rich or poor. The issue is whether or not you're righteous or unrighteous. The Bible divides into righteous stewards, righteous wealthy people, and righteous poor people versus unrighteous wealthy people and unrighteous poor people. It is part of God's economy to have wealthy, righteous people. Very much part of God's economy. They are to, righteous, wealthy people are people who get their money honestly by offering a true service, by selling goods, not by fraud, but by making good investments, by being responsible with their money, and God calls them to be generous. 2 Corinthians 9:10 says, he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will supply and multiply your seed for sowing and increase the harvest of your righteousness. You will be enriched in every way to be generous in every way, which through us will produce thanksgiving to God. I've been doing full-time ministry since 1992. None of it would have been possible without wealthy, righteous people in my life. 5 years and 1 month ago, I made a phone call telling a member of the core group in this church, I can't move. I can't come to Tulsa. I can't afford it. And the response I received was, church planning is going to be an enormous stress on your life, but money never will be. I'll pay for the move. If that conversation had not taken place, this would not be taking place. God has called people, wealthy people, to be generous, to be extravagantly generous. God has also got poor, righteous people in his economy. Being poor is not bad either. Just because you don't have money doesn't mean you've been irresponsible. It doesn't mean you're bad. It means God has chosen for you to be a righteous, poor person. James chapter 2 says, "Listen, my beloved brothers. Has not God chosen those who are poor in the world to be rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom, which he has promised to those who love him?" I've received tremendous ministry in my life from those who were poor and who loved the Lord. When I was a youth minister in Jackson, Mississippi, we took a bunch of kids, a bunch of wealthy Christian children, to Grace, Mississippi. Grace, Mississippi is as big as you think it is. There are more people in this room. It is as poor as you think it is. And we built Miss Jessie Ferguson a porch. Now, if you've never been in the Mississippi Delta and you've never been in a house without air conditioning in the Mississippi Delta, you don't understand why a porch matters. But if you are there, then you know the only way you can survive the summer is to have a screened-in porch. You have to have a porch because your house is just too hot to be in. And when you're in a place where the humidity is 98% on a dry day, you have to have, it has to be screened in because the mosquitoes will carry you away. They're enormous. And you just can't believe them unless you've seen them. And we built Miss Jessie Ferguson a porch. And we prayed for her the last day before we left. And she prayed with us every day. And she was thanking God every day that throughout her life, her power had never been turned off and she'd never missed a meal. And I'll never forget her prayer that last day. "Lord, I don't deserve this porch. But you've been so good to me." And every one of those wealthy kids were silent the whole ride home. Because they had been ministered to by someone who was poor. And it never occurred to them that they didn't deserve everything they had. And God had chosen someone who was poor in the world to be rich in faith. It doesn't mean you're good if you're wealthy. It doesn't mean you're bad if you're poor. The question for you is, are you righteous? Are you living by faith? What does money reveal? Money does not reveal whether or not you're righteous. What does it reveal? Jesus' teaching on money is twofold in this text. That's all. All that was kind of overview for the next couple of weeks. This text has two main points I'm going to teach. One is that money is deceptive, and the other is that money reveals our heart. Money is deceptive. Listen to this verse. It's interesting to me. Luke 12:15. He said to them, "Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." Isn't that interesting? Take care. Be careful you don't accident. Basically what he's doing is he's saying, be careful you don't accidentally commit this sin. What other sin do you say that about? I mean, do you commit fornication and then wake up in the morning and go, "Wait a minute, we're not married? I didn't know." You know, do you steal money and then look down the next day and go, "This isn't mine? I had no idea." There's no other sin that you accidentally commit. But greed is like that. It's very likely that we will be greedy and never know it. And the reason is this. There's several reasons. One is because greed is a moving target. We live in an upwardly mobile society. Everybody's trying to move up. What does that mean? It means you live around people who make at least as much as you do. And you want, and if you're like most Americans, you live around people who make slightly more than you do, or you're trying to live around people who make slightly more than you do, and what do you know? All the people who make more than you do have all the stuff that you do. And they spend like you do. And so you're not greedy because you're just like them. I don't even have what they have. I can't be greedy. And we don't look at everybody else. And we don't look at the people who have less. And it's also a moving target because greed takes many forms. The guy who spends all his money on parties looks at the person who saves all of his money and says, you don't spend because you're greedy. You just can't stand apart with a few pennies. The guy who saves all of his money looks at the guy who spends all his money and says, you spend so much because you love money too much and you need to learn to do without. Everybody defines greed conveniently around them and toward the other person. I'm not greedy because I'm not like you. You are greedy, not greedy. We all do that. Greed is a moving target, and so it's deceptive. Greed is also deceptive because, money is a good thing. How can it be bad? I mean, sure, the Bible might say it's bad, but we know reality, something so obviously good, can't be bad. Listen to these quotes. W.H. Vanderbilt, back at the 19th century, back when $2 million could still buy you something, said, the care of $2 million is enough to kill anyone. There is no pleasure in it. John Jacob Astor, one of the richest men to ever live, says, I am the most miserable man on earth. John J. Rockefeller said, I've made my millions, but they have brought me no happiness. Now, with the exception of one person in this room who's dealt with people in that category, is there anybody else who believed that, John? I mean, honestly. No happiness? Let me try and see if I can find some. The care of $2 million is so great it could kill anyone? Well, maybe you're just weak, but let me have a shot at it. I mean, really, did you believe that junk? Well, if we're not going to believe the people who have the money and shout back from there, don't waste your time trying to get here. It's not what you think. If you're not going to believe them, who will you believe? The people who have the money say, don't live for this. But greed is so deceptive, we just don't believe them. Money is deceptive because it's a moving target. Money is deceptive because we just don't, it provides such a false front. And finally, money is deceptive because it's taboo. We don't talk about it. We really don't. It's always been this way. Christianity, the Bible, God, has always stuck his nose into places that no decent human would do that. He's always kind of put his nose into our bedroom and our bank account. And we all know that respectable people don't do that. And the ancient Greeks, at the time of the early Christianity, one ancient Greek wrote, Christians are a vile bunch. They share their table with everyone, and they share their bed with none. God gets into our business. And in our world of just kind of sexual liberation where, you know, you're an absolute prude if you won't go on graphically about your sexual life, money is the taboo. Howard Stern, the shock radio jock who is extremely graphic about his sexual exploits on the radio, he once ran for the governor of New York. And when he found out that running to be the governor, he would have to make his IRS tax statements public, he dropped out the next day with a simple comment, that is none of your business. And that attitude carries over to the church. I don't think this is an exaggeration. I'll modify it a little bit because I don't want to exaggerate. I probably have somebody confess sexual immorality to me of one type or another once a month, at least. I don't know how much anybody makes. I've never had a single person come up to me and say, I'm too greedy, can you help? Isn't that interesting? Deceptive. Sly. Everybody else's problem. Jesus tells us, be careful. Be careful about all, be on your guard against all forms of covetousness. And he goes on to show us why. He says, shows us that money reveals our functional God. It does not matter what you claim to worship. Where your money goes shows the truth. First of all, let's look. We're going to look at this last little parable he tells briefly. And we're going to look at the most obvious thing first. First is the obvious bad investment. The rich fool says to himself, my soul is satisfied. I've got everything I need. And God says to him, you fool. This night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. He made an obviously bad investment because he forgot that this world is temporary. And all the stuff of this world is temporary. If you lived in Missouri, classic border state, during the Civil War, and you had, you know, you're officially in a Confederate state, even though you clearly had northern leanings, I don't know, you would have a ton of Confederate money. And if you knew without any question where the war was leading, what would you do with all that Confederate money? You'd cash it in, right? Why would you cash it in? Why would you trade it for federal money? Because your Confederate money would soon be worthless. That's what Jesus is telling us. This world is temporary. All those things that you think are so important are temporary. Everything that you spend your money on, everything that you fight about, everything that you have to have will all end up in a junkyard soon. Soon. People last forever. The kingdom of God lasts forever. And those are the only two good investments. Don't waste your money on stuff that will not last. It reveals that you don't believe in a world that's coming. Jesus warns us against the obvious bad investment, but he takes it deeper than that. Why does he even have this conversation? What spurs this parable? Man comes to Jesus and says, teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. What's happening? Jesus is obviously a rabbi who's got a lot of respect. Thousands of people are crowding around him, which means that he's got a lot of influence in the community. In a shame-based culture, people are going to want to do what he tells them to do. Obviously, there is a younger brother, whose father has died. What happened in that generation was when the parents died, they gave all the inheritance to the oldest son, and he would to protect the family name, and his job was to provide for his brothers and sisters as he saw fit. The younger brother is saying, I don't like that plan. He's not giving me as much money as I want. Jesus, you make him give me more. And Jesus refuses to do that. He simply says, well, who made me the teacher? I mean, who made me the arbitrator? Who made me the judge? Specifically, what is he refusing to do? He's saying, you're not going to use me to get to money. You won't use me to get to wealth. I won't be used. Why not? If you're using God to get to wealth, what's your ultimate reality? And what is your tool? The thing you're trying to get to is your ultimate reality, is the ultimate source of comfort. That's what's wrong with the fool in this parable. He thinks he's made it. Sold. You are at rest. You have arrived. You've got everything you could possibly need because you have wealth. God says, I am your ultimate reality. Make me your ultimate reality. That's not a bad investment. If you make me your ultimate reality, I will not let you down. You won't have to keep propping me up. And the question for us at the end of the sermon is, what are we using wealth to do? Use wealth to give you security. If you have enough, you will be safe. Are you the guy in the principal financial commercial, you know, with a number over his head? If I just get that number, I'll be safe. I promise you won't. Mr. Vanderbilt says you won't be. Jesus says you won't be. It will not make you safe. It is not a good investment. You will not take it with you. It's only going to make you more anxious to protect it, more anxious to keep it. What's your ultimate reality? What are you trying to get wealth to do for you? Are you trying to get it to make you win approval of people? Do you use your wealth to buy the status symbol car, the status symbol watch? Or to keep yourself in shape and cosmetically or whatever else way, so that everybody else will think that you are worthy of their friendship, so that you can get everyone else's approval? It's a never-ending investment. You'll never have it forever or even for long. You'll never have to stop propping up your body and stop buying the new thing. It'll never be permanent. And there's so much an easier way to get that. It's funny. At the office, we kind of have a little ongoing joke about clothes, and it's pretty clear who in the office dresses the coolest. And actually, it's funny. Bo and I, we're only about 3 years different in age. But we went to RUF 2 weeks ago, and Jordan Moyer is very acute, very wise girl. We kind of drew her into this conversation about how we dressed. And Jordan says, well, Jordan, of course, assumed that I was much older. And then she saved it by saying this, well, you dress older. And what was genius about that was we both took it as a compliment. I mean, it was funny. But I'm going to let you know why I can totally laugh at the conversation and do not care. With all my heart, I do not care. I honestly think my hair, I can't say that because the person in the room. Let's put it this way. The godliest, best, most beautiful haircut a man can possibly have, we all know it's parted right down the middle, feathered back. That's the way my hair is going to be in heaven. I think people who have stuck up, hair that sticks up looks like they didn't comb it. But why do I wear my hair like this? Why do I dress the way I do? It's purely because Bianca picks it out. And I do that because I would do that if she had terrible taste or if she had great taste. I would wear what she wanted me to wear. You know why? Because her opinion is the only one I care about. I say this with all the love in my heart. I do not care what you think about how I look. I really don't. Because I'm not going home with you tonight. What if you were so confident in God's opinion of how you looked that you could honestly, from the bottom of your heart, say, I don't care what anybody else thinks, whether you find me overweight or underweight, whether you think my clothes are out of fashion? What if you were so confident that God found you beautiful that you didn't care at all what anybody else said? Would you stop spending your money on that? Would you be able to invest in something that lasts? What if you really believed that your retirement was already completely and utterly funded and you couldn't possibly outlive it because your retirement home is being built by Jesus and you will live in it for eternity? What if you really believed that? Would you be a little bit more willing to give a little more? So that other people could share that retirement as well. What do you spend your money on? It's been a hard couple of weeks for me. And the reason, this is the one. I think a lot of you, if you're my Facebook friend, which all of you are, you know this, right? My television, my large screen television, the joy of my life, the center jewel of my crown went out. And It just stopped working 2 weeks after the warranty was up. It just stopped. Thanks. And I had, you know, the normal kind of reactions of that's stupid and that's, I was mad and unjust and yada, yada, yada. But honestly, I had to look at something a lot deeper. I had to ask myself, why am I this mad about it? And the answer was not pretty. The answer is I've really found the degree to which I look to money to make me feel better. When I am discouraged or disappointed about my life or about my wherever I am or about the circumstances I'm going through, I look to something that I can buy, whether it's a vacation, whether it's a television, whether it's the new video game console, which I have three of, whatever it is, I look to something to make me feel better. If that television hadn't gone out, I don't think I would have known that yet. Why can't I come to my Father in heaven and let Him make me feel better? Why can't I go to Him and drink deeply from the river of life that comes from Christ and feel better? Because you know what? Stuff ain't getting it done. Vacations end and they just make it harder to go back to work. And TVs break. You have to bring your old one back out. There's got to be a cheaper solution. We have to find what we're looking for money. It is more than ever. More than we would have ever dreamed or hoped. It is provided for in Christ. We must come to Him and get it. Please pray with me.